time for Lickin' On Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' On Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now, here's your host of Lickin' On Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin. Welcome, everybody. It is Monday, March 7th, 2022. Good to have you with us. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. And we're so grateful to have you as our listener. Again, our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. We are broadcasting live from the Lenders One Winter Conference here in Scottsdale, Arizona. We're at the JW Marriott. It's a glorious facility. It's cold here, though, guys. Talked to my wife yesterday, and it was warmer there in Texas than it was here in Phoenix by 15 degrees. It's really cold. Anyway, it's good to have you here with us. We are warmed by your many comments, and many of you give us so much feedback about how this podcast is helping you stay on top of things. So thank you. Always looking for things we could do better, so we'd love to hear from you. So let's get into it. Today we have on the Hot Topic segment, Chris Zingo. He is General Manager of the Americas Field of Operation for Finastra. And we're going to be discussing mortgage lending in 2022, as well as the broader picture of what's going on with technology and how it is being driven through ESG and an acceleration of digital technology in the mortgage world. We pre-recorded this interview because I knew I was going to be here at the conference, but I'm really excited to share with you. Finastra is such a major industry participant technology company, and we're so grateful to have them also as a sponsor. So stay tuned to the Hot Topic segment. Also, I want to say a special thank you to Industry Syndicate. We have a great partnership with them. They do a great job of promoting our podcast as well as other podcasts. Check out industrysyndicate.com, and I encourage you to see all the podcasts there. Hey, another word, next week I will be in Las Vegas, and Lender Toolkit has invited me to come in. We're going to be doing a podcast recordings from there, and it's an exciting event, and it'll be Monday, March 14th at the ICE Experience, and we're going out to a racetrack and running around with Ferraris. Can you believe that? This is tough work, guys. Someone's got to do it, though. Got to get in a Ferrari, drive fast around the track. And we're going to be doing that. I encourage you, if you haven't already gotten a hold of the folks at Lender Toolkit, it's not too late. You too can participate in this. But also, I want to encourage anyone there in Las Vegas at the ICE Experience, again, Intercontinental Exchange, which is ICE, which bought Ellie Mae, and they're doing a great job putting on their annual conference. So check out Lender Toolkit's booth. Hope you can make it out to the racetrack. I'd love to see you there. A lot of us are going to have some fun riding those cars. I'm excited to have Jack Nunnery joining us again on this podcast. He's a co-host of the podcast with me. And as soon as I get done here, I'm going to go into the main session. And my good friend, Casey Crawford, is going to be speaking. So I'll be meeting up with him here in a few minutes. So we're going to get through these introductions and then toss it to Jack and let him take it from here. So I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. Very thrilled to have them as part of us and their sponsorship, as well as Finastra. Again, we're going to have Chris Zingo today as the special guest. Also, Lenders One. Also, Mortgage Collaborative. We will be to be at the TMC, Mortgage Collaborative, Miami Night Conference, March 19th through the 22nd. Be sure to go listen to the interview with Rich Zerbinski on February 7th. Both these co-ops create great competitive advantages for both lenders and vendors. Also, I encourage you to check out Total Expert. It turns customer insights into actions to increase loyalty and drive growth for banks, lenders, credit unions, and other financial firms. I went through a demo this last week, and I was blown away with what Total Expert can do to help lenders and have meaningful relationships. Amazing stuff. Also, Knowledge Group, thrilled to have them here. Saw them, many of them here at this conference, as well as Mobility MMI, which is the Mortgage Market Intelligence. They do a great job of helping recruit top loan officers, as does Modex, a mortgage recruiting technology tool that's very effective. Also, SnapDocs is a sponsor of us, and we appreciate them. They help lenders overcome obstacles by adopting e-mortgage technology. SnapDocs is now offering an e-mortgage quick start program. Check it out. Also, check out the interview I did with Vishal Rana back on September 13th. Also, SuccessKit. Folks, I tell you so much about SuccessKit and what they can do for you in drawing in and holding on to customers. They help you tell your story. There's an old proverb that says, let another man's mouth praise you, not that of your own. Well, that's what SuccessKit does. They help you as a lender interview previous customers and create a narrative that will just be engaging and help you advance your business. So be sure to check them out. Also, PennyMac, their TPO, third-party originations platform. Check out the interview with Tim Nichols. We had November 1st of last year, as well as Form Free. Christy Moss, they sponsored the opening session here, and it was a great speaker, and so fun to see the Form Free crew here. As well as DW Consulting. Debbie Weemis does a great job of helping you create an effective LinkedIn profile that'll promote you and your business successfully. Special thank you goes out to Rob, Les, Alice, Alan, Matt, and of course, Jack. So glad to have you here.
Folks, I'm excited to have joining us the general manager of the Americas. Doesn't that sound incredible? And this individual is incredible. I met him in Austin, Texas. His name is Chris Zingo. Chris, good to have you joining on the podcast. Appreciate you taking time.
Great to be here, David. Thank you.
General manager of the Americas. That's pretty impressive. I love that.
It's blocking and tackling. I mean, serve your customers well, good things happen.
Yes, I love it. Reduce it down to that. I want to talk a little about mortgage lending in 2022, and we're talking about driving growth through ESG and the acceleration of digital technology. I know a lot of independent mortgage bankers, which make up a lot of our listeners. We have small community banks, which I had the privilege of speaking or moderating with a number of your executives in San Antonio on Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock in the morning. Only independent community bankers would be going to session at 7 o'clock, and the place was packed out, Chris. I couldn't believe it. So yeah, it was great doing that, but it's a real honor to have you as a sponsor as well as a partner in those podcasts. And I'm really interested in sharing your vision with everyone. And I want to start off by talking about ESG. A lot of people do not understand ESG as environmental, social, and governance. If you could talk a little bit about that, it's in a lot of your talking points when you're talking out and speaking to community bankers. So I'd like to get your perspective. What does Finastra mean by ESG?
Well, environmental and social government has basic themes that wrap into it. But at a high level, we look at it in two dynamics. One is purpose-driven, right? And we talk about the changing demographics and the changing demand of the end user in today's market. One of the things that is driving their demand is gravitating toward purpose-driven institutions that actually will have an impact on environmental or social governance in some way. Whether it's environmental impact in reducing carbon footprint, et cetera, whether it's social impact in terms of empowering underserved communities or unlocking capital into areas of the society not previously unlocked, those types of things. So high level, there are two elements. On the purpose-driven, if you look at Finastra, our purpose, our mission is to unlock the power of people and potential everywhere using our technology. And when you translate that to financial services, that means the democratization of capital, the ability to extend capital every leaf node or corner of our society. That's a purpose driven, but it's also financially smart. And you look at the concept of sustainability, significant untapped market associated with serving underserved communities, right? If you just look at the potential of unlocking the ability to distribute capital to certain areas of our communities in the U.S. alone, we're talking about $800 billion opportunity, right? If we can break through the barriers in these communities that typically revolve around access to capital, but there's also a massive technology dependence, and that's where we come in. And if you look at the concept of sustainability, the way technology providers like us provide sustainability is by helping our clients offer innovative products and solutions for their markets at a much lower cost structure. And that's where the technology comes in. So if you look at just the concept of cloud and scale, and the broader open ecosystem of bringing innovation to banking, that improves the customer experience and lowers the cost. And that drives the extension of capital and sustainability. If you look at the ESG element of launching innovation in the form of new product, loans linked to social or environmental impact, those loans actually are issued at a lower overall cost based on the incentives of the impact in terms of where those loans are funding. And if banks can prove that, they can bring low-cost products to market very quickly. And on the flip side, if you look at the purpose-driven demand side, if you look at ESG funds, right, these are equity funds whose underlying components are institutions that have certain ESG standards that are transparent and proven. $18 trillion have gone into those funds in the last 8 years.
Wow.
So on the demand side for institutions behaving this way, trillions of dollars are going in. On the flip side, from a financial institution perspective, there's a high demand and potential opportunity to launch innovative products linked to these outcomes at a much lower cost structure. And again, that drives sustainability.
But the reality is you're talking about a purpose. And I think there's so many people that lack a purpose, and a purpose is not just making money. That is the result. And I love what you're talking about there. We also want to talk about the acceleration of the digital technologies, and we're looking more and more at how lenders must offer customers a one-stop shop that delivers the proper expectation for the customers. And I love the fact that you have an open architecture. You are, I believe, the first technology company, leading technology company. You're the number one fintech company in the world. And you led the way with this, if I'm not mistaken, and it creates an integration. So talk about the customer's one-stop place. And as a vendor, what do banks and mortgage lenders need to think about in that concept?
Okay, terrific. I think in general, we at Finastra believe the future of finance is open. And what that means in the current pace of technology innovation, where Moore's law is on steroids, the technology innovation is allowing us to operate at a certain level of scale and allows participants to connect with a broader ecosystem, a technology ecosystem that enables rapid innovation, rapid deployment, and much lower cost deployment. So the agility required today to launch and evolve with those changing customer demographics is critical. And 90% of the innovation that we distribute to our customers are going to be developed outside of our walls. So we're transforming from the building, deploying, testing, deploying, UAT exit, all of that life cycle. We're changing to a consumption model where we will connect the broader fintech ecosystem with our underlying banking service on the cloud and without the need for our customers to intervene, which means we can bring back to them innovation that they can consume and extend to their customers as easy as going to the app store and buying banking capability, right? And that's the future of the way all technology is going to be distributed. And what that does is it gives a much better end user experience. It increases the velocity of banking services. It personalizes banking services. It provides a level of transparency to the end user not currently having. So all of those things can only be delivered on the cloud and can only be through a combination of banks connecting with the broader fintech ecosystem to provide technologies for their customers that have the right level of user experience, but also delivers financial services where their customer is, right, not where their bank is.
I think that's such a good point. I love what you're talking about with open architecture, the whole broader vision, but I think some might hear that as, does that open up and expose us to more cybersecurity issues? Talk about that.
Well, anytime you're distributing capabilities via the cloud, there's always a risk. However, when you look at the current risks associated with the way technology is deployed, you know, whether it's on-premise and the banks own data centers or whether it's via the public cloud, there's always some level of risk. But what we found is that the broader cloud platforms like Azure, which we have native capabilities, we're the 30th largest consumer of Azure on the planet based on the clients that we have running on the public cloud. But what we found is Microsoft spends $1.2 billion a year in cybersecurity, right?
Great partner to have with that kind of budget.
Not one individual client has that budget.
Exactly right.
To invest in cyber. We don't. They have a broader ecosystem, which is accessible to us, right? So being part of the public cloud, we have access to state-of-the-art cyber capabilities. We have access to state-of-the-art ecosystem providers, right, to protect against things like fraud and other elements. So our security platform is much more bolstered by being on the public cloud as much as it is potentially risk. And then if you look at the traditional risks of fraud associated with legacy technology, I mean, you have to worry about physical data centers. Physically, people break in and steal data. You have to worry about the lack of cyber capabilities that are compatible with your existing architecture, right? So patterns are changing every day. Being on the cloud and being able to maintain cyber protection that's current picks up all the heuristic patterns of malware and things like that. You can't do if you have closed technology that you're updating every quarter, every 6 months, et cetera. So there are numerous elements that would suggest being on the public cloud and managing it using state-of-the-art technology with continuous delivery is the only way to go, but it's not without risks.
Yeah.
It's really about educating our clients.
Yeah, and it comes back to the partnership. You've partnered with a company that has spent over $1 billion on cybersecurity, Microsoft. And did I hear you say you're 30%?
We are the 30th largest consumer.
Okay.
Of cloud consumption on the Azure platform.
That's amazing. That is in itself. Let's talk about a lot of disintermediation that can happen. I want to get into why are the changing customer needs impacting disintermediation?
Interesting. Disintermediation for the evolution of the kind of next generation fintech that probably has been underway for the last 5 years. Basically, is launching technology innovation in the fintech space that is more favorable to the end user of traditional banks, right? Now, if you look at today, changing demographics is a big element of that acceleration of demand. Today is the only generation in our history where there are four generations of people in the same workforce. Baby boomers, Gen X, millennials, Gen Z, all in the same workforce. Never happened in our history, right? So their demands are rapidly evolving. Those individuals that were Gen X, Gen Z are now in commercial, in senior positions in commercial institutions, large corporate, investment banks. So the demographics are different. They value different things, right? They value purpose-driven capability.
Yeah.
They value immediacy, real time. They value frictionless banking capabilities. They don't stand for it, right? They expect it to be served where they are. They don't expect to have to do unnatural acts like walking into a branch to do a transaction or going into an online portal that's not connected to any other element of their finance to do a transaction. They won't tolerate that. Rapid adjudication, if they're originating a mortgage and they don't get immediate feedback, and if they have to use documents and they have to use email and they have to burn cycles on that, they're going to go to somewhere else. And if you looked at what happened over the last few years in the United States alone, 63% of all mortgages are originated not by banks, but by fintechs now.
That's amazing.
Because of the things I said, rapid adjudication, frictionless experience, no documentation, or very minimal required. The average life cycle with those 63% is 10 days less from application to close than a traditional finance institution in the United States.
Having done as much legal expert witness work as I have, I'm hearing you using adjudication. So break that down a little bit.
You know, it's a fancy way to say the credit decisioning process.
Yeah, there you go. I knew what you meant, but I want to expand on that. What are the kinds of differences should be accounted for when Gen Z or minority first home buyers are really entering the market, especially from your perspective on the technology, from fintech's perspective?
Well, again, if you go back to that credit adjudication, I think that there are legacy credit procedures that banks manage to the T because that's all that they can do historically. That is basically non-inclusive. They're missing significant opportunity to underwrite really good loans to really good counterparties, but in the traditional credit sense, they wouldn't be considered that.
Right.
So connecting and changing your credit adjudication procedures and processes, expanding the data sets that you have access to from which you can personalize those to credit decisions rather than genericizing them. It can open up a significant capital pool from which you can lend to. And we're seeing opportunities like that happen in the market using tools like social networking connectivity, AI, and other techniques.
What are you seeing banks doing about this?
Most of the things I'm talking about, banks are doing. Right. There's billions of dollars of capital invested in opening up their architecture, connecting with the financial services ecosystem. Many are accelerating their strategies around banking.
With having the strong banking, you guys are so well entrenched into the community banking community, and bringing that language over to many independent mortgage bankers, I think is really valuable. So I don't mind you doing that at all. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that in a mortgage, for example, is many institutions are thinking about, do I sell mortgages or do I sell home buying experiences?
Yeah.
Right. Do I want to sell a commoditized product, right, where I might not be able to compete with the level of digitalization as a third party? Or do I want to be in the center of my customers' financial exchanges associated with that entire home buying journey? So if I can embed financial capabilities into the ecosystem of my customers, whether it's a Zillow, et cetera, I want to be present where they are every step of the way. I want to give them a listing of homes. I want to give them the comps. I want to give them immediate mortgage options with pre-approval digital, right? I want to suggest title insurance, and I want to be able to affect the fund transfer to pay for that title insurance and that entire experience. So that's what banking as a service is. It's really embedding, we call it embedded finance, but where we can extend financial services outside of the walls of the bank digitally and connect it into their customers' ecosystem to create those journeys so that our clients, financial institutions, can be at the center of every one of those exchanges. And the mortgage market's a big opportunity for that.
We talked about ESG, the environmental social governance, earlier, and we kind of touched on that. I'd like to have you go a little bit deeper into it, especially as it relates to banking technology and specifically lending.
Sure. Yeah, so an example, we onboarded a new purpose-driven bank in the United States, Climate First Bank. They've got an environmental mandate in terms of a green bank. And the first thing that we launched from the entire core banking and digital stack that we implemented when we onboarded them were solar loans.
Hmm.
Right? So loans linked to the financing of solar panels.
Certainly connects with the environmental component of ESG.
Absolutely. And those loans are offered at a lower interest rate, right, because of the incentive for where those funds are going to fund an environmentally dynamic of solar panels. So they launched it. And using technology, they're not only able to launch those loans digitally with low cost and at a lower interest rate because of the incentive, but a key element of it, they're able to track the impact and the outcome of where those funds are going. And they're doing it in our core banking system linked to our digital technology that's launching the loans. Really exciting.
That is exciting stuff. When you look at where the next wave of innovation is coming from, we had Karen Jenkins on. I was so impressed with that interview when she talked about where you are, the design, the whole product drive. It was really interesting. I'd love to get your perspective on where you think the next innovation is going to be coming from to afford lenders more of a competitive advantage in the marketplace. And how is Finastra specifically?
Yeah, again, I think it really is about how can they connect to their customers' ecosystem. Right, in a scalable way, to allow their customers to transform the experience of, say, for example, a mortgage application process.
Right.
Right. So can I bring services to my customers where they are? Can I minimize or eliminate the customer need to illustrate documentation? Right. Can I connect into their ecosystem? Right. So I already can verify their income. I already know what their asset bases are. I already know what their current credit profiles are. Like all of those things should be known in real time. And can I use that to speed up the entire life cycle of that experience? Can I use that to give them an optimal rate, right? Because I'm personalizing their experience. All of those things are opportunities, right? That can help unlock right. and create sustainable right. lending, right? They're market opportunities.
Chris, I want to talk about your thoughts on rethinking the operating model of our companies, the way we're going about lending, especially in conventional mortgage lending. Should we be low to no touch or focus on resources or high-end value products? How should we be approaching it?
Well, again, it really depends on the individual institution and their strategy. What do they want to be when they grow up? And I think that's the first question they have to answer themselves. But in general, I would say implementing a technology architecture and using current capabilities to give you optionality. What we're seeing is a new operating model evolve that are segmented out by the customer segments and the products that they distribute. So there are certain types of loans, maybe conventional Fannie Freddie, that should be zero touch. There are certain types of loans like jumbos and other that have other mitigating circumstances that are more bilateral in nature. And might have an 80-20, right? So 80% of it is templatized and automated, and the FTE capacity is really around adding value to the client, personalizing that loan, getting to the right,
right.
structure. Then you have a third pillar that's typically fully structured, which always starts with some baseline. So we're seeing that the concept of flow business and the concept of moderate touch and then the concept of high touch, those are three dynamics that are happening in every institution. It's really the weighting. But there's no reason, if I'm doing a conventional Fannie or Freddie, right, which gets sold off my balance sheet immediately, there's no reason that should be no touch 100% of the time, right? A very powerful end user experience.
You're bringing up a great experience, especially for the first-time home buyer. The millennials, there's all the studies show that they're not necessarily wanting to talk to you until they're ready to talk to you as a lender. They
right.
want to gain all the information first. But from that point on, they do want an advisor. And I think that's one of the things that you're trying to get to when you're talking about adding high value. We talked about this down in San Antonio at the ICBA conference. And I think it was Peter that brought up a point that was we're needing to see ourselves transition from providing a mortgage loan. Who wants a mortgage loan? They're trying to buy a house. The mortgage loan is just a means to the ultimate goal. But we're finding more and more people are wanting strong advisor. And I think that's a high value.
Yeah. And I would say, David, the baseline we tell our people internally as well as our clients, if your resources are spending their time talking with their customers and answering how-to questions, it's a waste of time. Those people touching the customer should build upon the transaction that's already digitized to then talk about, let's talk about the implication of the decisions you're making right now. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about ways to optimize this. The base elements of just facilitating a transaction, right, using bank speech is very low value add. And as a matter of fact, it's offensive to the new demographic client that they're serving. So if you're talking about how to, as it pertains to a transaction in any form, you're missed the boat.
Yep. That's a really good point.
You basically automate the base elements of those transactions. So mm-hmm. then when a consultant comes in, they already know the information about you. They already know where you are in this transaction, and they come with you with advice, right? And that's where the white glove treatment should be.
Yeah. And this is enabled so much through technology. All the really heavy lifting, the transactional part of it is there. That's done. We are adding what we should add, and that's the service component, the advisory role. I want to talk about reevaluating the end-to-end life cycle. In other words, if you have a mortgage and you're doing a standard refinance or purchase, why is there a need for a manual process? There is. But from your perspective as a technologist and a leader in the market, talk about that.
Yes, because the current technology architecture of many finance institutions is a byproduct of the way they bought over the last 30 years technology. It's also a byproduct of the availability at the time, which the availability of technology in the last 5 years now is just very different than the previous 30 years. But it's also based on the way banks go to market and the traditional concept of channel. Channel is really just an opportunity to monetize every exchange an end user has with the bank. Their technology infrastructure aligned around channels, because that's the way the business has bought and implemented technology. So the reality of it is, there is a need for a manual process, because when you go for a refi, the person that is facilitating your refi has no idea you already have a mortgage, most likely. So they have to ask you for the same information again. They don't have the horizontal 360 history as you as a client of the bank. If you were a small business of that same bank and you had a retail account, they would know you had a retail account. Or they would know you were a small business client. Now, that's changing, and many institutions are accounting for that. I'm making generic statements. But the reality of it is, it's inertia, and it's the fact that the systems, topology, and architecture don't support true horizontal 360 banking experience. That's where the cloud technology and the open innovation comes in, so that our banks can transform from that stovepipe end-to-end channel to an omni-channel, shifting from products to advice, shifting from a product to a client. So revolving their entire organization around a client is where they're going now.
And part of the journey is the manual processes are being adjusted because of how much technology can do. So we do need to go back and look at the manual process from a workflow standpoint. And I love how you guys really initiate and help your partners do just that.
Exactly. For us to be successful, we cannot sell software in isolation. We have to sell a operating model wrapped around a business model and then baseline their current state with the future state operating model and collaboratively identify the changes we're going to make over an horizon and how what we're going to implement to get them to an end state. And when we do that well, that's the collaborative success we see.
Yeah.
It's the best outcome. If we simply fulfill our customers' requests for an LOS system or a POS system, we're not really going to be in the best position to add a lot of value. So we've really changed the way we go to market, and we force the operating model discussion and business model, then we back into the software.
As we wrap up this interview, I want to talk about the purpose-driven. That really resonated. And I want to leave our listeners with some thought leadership. As the number one fintech company in the world, and having the privilege of being the general manager of the Americas, I mean, I'm assuming that's everything from North America down to South America and everything in between. Mm-hmm. You have that responsibility. Talk about purpose and give us some examples. You already gave us an example of the one bank, the Green Bank, that really started up and doing the solar lending. Give us some other examples of what difference it can make when you identify, clearly articulate your purpose, and how it works with your strategy, especially when it comes to technology.
Sure, absolutely. Well, if you go back to our mission of unlocking the power of people and businesses everywhere, with respect to lending, that's extending capital to every area of our society, right? I think there's nothing more purpose-driven than empowering people with money or enabling the empowerment of money because that gives optionality. And when more people have access to capital, the overall pie gets infinitely bigger. Like most people think the pie is a finite and it's a zero-sum game. It's not. And technology innovation is making that pie scale even more exponentially than it is today. So the untapped potential of the current environment is massive. But whether your purpose is empowering underserved institutions, so for example, a minority banking institution, MBI, one of the areas that we tilted into 2 years ago, and this was during COVID, when the PPP program was launched,
right.
We support 575 SBA lenders. We already had the connectivity to E-Tran and the SBA platform. Prior to the PPP, we created an end-to-end capability to automate the application input and automate the approval and automate the documentation and execution using our ProSign. So we empowered a lot of small institutions just with PPP because many institutions had to do everything manually. It was a bottleneck. So we sat in the middle of that. Now, what that gave us is we started to look where these PPP loans were going. And in the first round of the payroll protection funding, $349 billion of capital went in less than a week.
Wow.
It's really a grant that was issued mm-hmm. through the financial institutions for the first time ever. And what we saw is that most of the capital was first come, first serve, and it went to mature financial institutions serving mature commercial clients that had some level of connectivity and scale.
Right.
And they were able to serve at scale. So our owner, Vista Equity Partners, you know, the CEO.
Right here in
Robert
Austin,
Smith,
Texas, I might want to say.
Absolutely. Robert Smith is African-American, and he's heavily involved in empowering underserved communities. He huddled us, started analyzing where this was going. So we identified this gap. So we partnered with the broader ecosystem, like we had a series of key stakeholders representing the CDFI community, like Donna Gambrell, the CEO of Alliance of African American CDFI Investors. Kenneth Kelly at the time was the CEO of the National Bank Association, which represents the 19 Black-owned banks in the United States. And we got together, and in the second round, we onboarded 13 beta clients for this lending in a box, right? The same PPP solution, but we launched it on the cloud, and we gave it to them at a very low cost. Actually, we gave it to them for nothing so that they can participate in the second round. And we found that they were able to sustainably support many of their clients, issue these PPP loans with the same headcount because they're very small in headcount. So we used that to say, okay, we're going to invest heavily in this market. And we invested post that with Microsoft to scale our technology and offer it out at very low cost, if not no cost, to certain institutions serving underserved communities. Now, what we found on the back of that is institutions that we work with during PPP, many of them developed a sustainable commercial client base off of that PPP program because many of their clients came to them because they couldn't get access to PPP in their existing bank because of the bottleneck. Right? So many of those institutions, because they implemented technology and they built relationships with Tier 1 capital, they built a sustainable commercial business. Like Carver State Bank, like Harbor Bank in D.C., where they have powerful commercial businesses off the back of that. And they're able to reinvest in their communities and reinvest in innovative loans because they're successful, because they have a sustainable lending program, for example. And that becomes exponential. So when you see the impact of that, it empowers us to invest more in this area. And by the way, if we do it right, we're untapping a segment of our markets that we never were able to address, right? And it's a win-win. We call it doing well by doing good. We will do well if our clients do well. And that's aligning that purpose is critical.
Yeah. So, where do you see lending specifically here 2 to 5 years out? You guys have a unique perspective. Obviously, more and more technology is enabling more and more. We're seeing more of the advisor role and less of the transactional role as it relates to the FTEs, the full-time employees. What's your vision? What's Finastra's vision?
Well, I say, again, we want to bring financial services to the end user where they are and empower our clients to do that. If we do that, then we can create a frictionless banking experience at a much lower cost and much more optionality for our clients and their end users, right? Which again drives sustainability because you're unlocking capital and opportunity. All right, so what do we see in the next 3 years? Well, those types of services come to the end user where they are. I'm talking whether they're in a native application that they use every day, their social network. YouTube, the number one source of financial literacy for Gen Zs, today.
I did not know that. Not surprised by that. I spend YouTube's more time on YouTube now than I do on television.
It's the number one source of their knowledge about banking.
Wow, partner
in
with
YouTube.
That.
So what are the opportunities there, right, in terms of embedding certain financial capabilities?
Wow.
Right. The other thing is optionality, right? You're seeing innovation that's linked to POS. So when I say where they are, POS, when they go to POS, right, buy now, pay later, that's a micro loan immediately adjudicated at the point of transaction, right? And that's providing optionality. And that's also giving certain financial institutions access to an SME market with a low risk profile and at more scale. This concept of micro lending, those are in place today. So there's no reason for certain transactions why the end user ever needs to touch any element of their finance institution, right? But what they do expect is the advice on the back. As soon as they touch that POS, there should be a call to them. As soon as they submit that mortgage application, right, and facilitate a few steps in microseconds, there should be a call to them, right? Changing the way our clients interact with their clients, adding the value. So we want to basically make the transaction like a light bulb.
Yeah.
People expect it to be on and expect it to work.
Yeah.
What you do with it above and beyond is your secret sauce as a bank.
That's excellent. Well, Chris, we're out of time. I'll say this. I'm going to play on that word adjudication. You've adjudicated this interview really well. Well, I love this interview. It's so much fun to talk with someone who has the vision and can articulate as well as you do. Great to have you as a guest. Look forward to having you back soon. Please, I really mean that. I want to have you back soon. We got to hear more of this kind of global perspective, what's going on. The big tech, you being the biggest of all the fintechs out there, have a unique perspective we can all learn from. Thanks so much for being here with us.
Great. Thanks for having me, David. Anytime. Again, your energy is infectious. So thank you.
Well, it's an honor to be with you, Chris. Energy feeds off of energy, so I'm getting it from you as well. All right.
Very good. Thank you.
Say a special thank you to all of our sponsors, Finastra, Lenders One, Mobility MMI, Modex, the MBA, Knowledge Coop, the Mortgage Cooperative, SnapDoc, Success Kit, Lender Toolkit, PennyMac, Total Expert, and Forum Free. Have a great week, everybody. Forward to seeing you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.